Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
This is Barron's Live. Each weekday, we bring you live conversations from our newsrooms about what's moving the market right now. On this podcast, we take you inside those conversations, the stories, the ideas, and the stocks to watch so you can invest smarter. Now, let's dial in.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Barron's Live, MarketWatch edition. I'm Andrew Keschner, reporter from MarketWatch, and I'm pleased today to welcome Scott Bishop, Executive Director of Wealth Solutions for Avidian Wealth Solutions. Welcome, Scott. Thank you for being here.
Happy to be here, Andrew.
Scott, here we are. It's April 7th in, quote, normal times. We'd be coming up on crunch time for tax season. That is not the case in this very complicated tax year. So start by walking us through what the IRS recently did and didn't do as far as the filing deadline.
Well, in terms of the filing deadline, nothing's been canceled, but it has been postponed. One of the benefits we have is basically everybody in the country has at least until May 17th to be able to file their tax return without penalty, file an extension. Because remember, that extension, whether it be for businesses or it be for personal, you can extend your filing deadline for up to September 15th or October 15th. But what it's showing now is we can extend that filing deadline from traditionally where it is from April 15th to May 17th. That's that Monday after the long weekend. So you have till May 17th to do those types of things. There are a few states like we had here in Texas with our natural disaster area, but Texas, Oklahoma, and Louisiana actually have till June 15th to do it. So again, we have all that ability to. This is for federal returns only. Some states have allowed for that, but not all states. There's a few states, so please check with your state for any state income tax filings that you may have due. That's something that's important to do it. One of the other things also is, other than for the Texas, Louisiana, and Oklahoma, who have an extension to May 17th for estimated tax payments, as of right now, estimated tax payments are still due on April 15th. For those outside those states, they're in discussions right now to extend those out to May 17th. So be ready both in timing and the forms you need to do your estimated tax payments in the event they don't do that.
So, you know, and this happened, and actually just to be clear, what if I have a tax bill that's due? Can I get an extension to pay that, or I still have to pay that at the deadline?
Well, you always have the ability to pay it through the extensions on September 15th or October 15th, but it's calculated as due, in this case, on May 17th. So if you actually owed $10,000, you may pay some additional interest or even penalties if you wait until all the way to September 15th or October 15th to pay it. One of the rules of thumb, again, of course, check with your tax professional, but one of the rules of thumbs you have, as long as you pay, even regardless of income, 110% of your prior tax liability between estimated tax payments and things you had withheld from your employer, you wouldn't owe any penalties, but you still may have a small interest calculation. Again, it's not an onerous interest rate, but it's something to consider.
So why did the IRS push this back? Last year, that got pushed back to July 15th. Why did they push it back again this year?
I think a part of it was, you know, still the pandemic, but also there was a lot of concerns about what was going to happen because of these rebate checks. When do I have to do it for these rebates and tax credits? There was a lot of confusion because this tax year is going to be quite a bit different because people either did or did not receive those rebate checks last year based on the Trump and Republican and Democrat concessions. And so if they did not receive those, then they may still be able to get it because all of the rebates that people received last year were based on their 2020 returns. So people want to make sure they claim it. So if you got a $600 payment last year, you need to either tell the tax prep software or your tax preparer that you got those. So it's a little bit more confusing than the average tax year because of those pandemic payments that were made last year.
Yeah. You had mentioned the estimated payments. I want to come back to those. So there's still the April 15th deadline to pay those. who pays those, and you know, what are the consequences if you don't pay them or underpay them?
Well, there is no requirement to pay those estimated tax payments, but if you underpay or you don't pay it on a timely basis, the IRS can assess interest. So who are the people that typically have to do it? Most people that work in a traditional job where they get a W-2 statement, where they're an employee for a company, they withheld a significant portion of their compensation through payroll check withholdings. So many of those people don't have to do it. But every single year, if you use tax preparation software, your CPA, they may say you underpaid a little bit. So this year on a quarterly basis, starting on April 15th, you have to make estimated tax payments. It's once a quarter, every 3 months following that, with the last one typically on January 15th of the successor year. But most of the people that have to pay estimated tax payments are not people with W-2 jobs primarily. It tends to be people that are independent contractors, but it even could be people like gig workers, people working for Uber, for Lyft, for Uber Eats, people that do a second job that they may not have done it correctly, but self-employment income, or people with pass-through businesses. So if you have an S corporation or an LLC where the entity itself does not pay taxes, most of that goes down on the business owner's personal tax return. And in those cases, income tax is not withheld on a mandatory basis. So for most of those people, they have to actually have estimated tax payments for that. Other people where it may be is maybe people that have exceptional investment income. Because if you think about it, when you take money out of retirement accounts, they have mandatory withholding. But if you earn interest, dividends, capital gains, or maybe you sold a business property or you sold your business before or after the pandemic, that can create capital gains tax income that will not have any estimated taxes paid for. So it's typically people that are not getting most of their income through a W-2 employee job. Does that help, Andrew?
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, so there's more time to file my taxes. That means, does that also mean that I have more time to shrink my tax bill if I want to? And how can I do that?
Yeah, there's a few ways to be able to do it for 2020, but there's not that many ways. Some things like itemized deductions and property tax payments and things like that have to be done during the calendar year. But there are a few things you could still do. And some of these things are extended through either May 17th or June 15th. One can be to do a tax deductible IRA. So if you have the ability to put money into an IRA and you don't have an employer plan, you may be able to do a tax deductible IRA. That would reduce your taxes by the IRA amount that you could put in. You could also fund, if you have an HSA or a health savings account eligible health plan, you could put money into that HSA plan up to the applicable amounts. That may reduce it. More substantively, though, if you had self-employment income, maybe you have a Schedule C business, you can actually maybe put together a solo 401k, a SEP IRA, a simple IRA, even in some cases, a defined benefit pension plan, if it's new, and you can actually put money away for the 2020 tax year, and those can put substantive reductions into your 2020 tax bill that may actually help you. Also with some of these benefits, which we could talk about if you want later, Andrew, if you're passing some of these thresholds for phase out of getting some of these government benefits, whether it be for child tax credits or for the $1,400 payments that people just got.
So the American Rescue Plan, which passed in March, also in the vein of keeping a tax year super complicated, it had something to say about income taxes and jobless benefits. So
correct.
Walk us through what happened there.
Well, especially for are you talking about the $1,400 payments that were being paid out recently?
This is the exclusion of the $10,000, $200 exclusion on the income tax payments.
Oh, I got you. That's the unemployment insurance benefits. So
correct, yeah.
The good news about that is excludable completely from your federal tax return. So if you got those unemployment benefits, do not worry about it on your federal tax return. I had a little cheat sheet I had there. Some states are giving you a break on the state level, but you need to check with your states. But there's several states that pay state income tax where they haven't yet gotten a tax break on the state side for those unemployment benefits. States like Colorado, Georgia, Hawaii, New York, South Carolina, and others, you may still have to pay state income tax on those benefits. So it's a good thing to be able to check and make sure that your state either does or does not exclude it. But at least on the federal basis, you won't have to pay taxes on those unemployment insurance benefits.
So, and then keeping it even more complicated, what if I already filed my taxes before Congress passed the American Rescue Plan and before they said that this first $10,200 is excludable from my income tax? What do I do then? Because that's a pretty valuable tax break for me.
Well, if you filed, a lot of people get worried about changing or amending a tax return. When you file your 1040, that's when you're reporting your personal income taxes. You could do an amended return, a 1040X. It's not a big audit red flag that people get worried about, but feel free right now to do a file an amended tax return. And I don't know how long it's going to take to be processed. The IRS is really busy. But if you overpaid and they agree with your amendment, they will give you the refund of the additional taxes you paid on the federal tax return.
Oh, and actually, you know, and I think even the newest news on that, Scott, that I'd heard is that if you, the IRS is going to automatically adjust it, actually.
Well, that happens sometimes. They don't always do that. But if they've actually said that, that's a wonderful benefit that the IRS is doing in terms of service to the taxpayers. I wouldn't have expected that. That's wonderful news.
Yeah. They were saying, you know, don't file. Well, I think the thing that I'd heard is don't file an amended return. You know, what they'll do is they'll readjust your return by themselves on their side. But if you hadn't claimed like a certain credit, like the earned income tax credit on your previous return, they're not going to do it for you. You would have to, that's when you would have right. to amend your return and then seek it then based on your new eligibility. But keeping it super, super complicated.
Well, the one thing I would say is they are real busy. So again, I would check with whoever prepares your taxes. If you do your own taxes, that may be a good thing. But I don't know how long it would take them to do that calculation with the flood of tax issues they're dealing with. So if that was money that's material that you want to be able to get the refund for it at 20%, tax bracket, that's $2,000 or more of tax savings. If you did do an amended return, it's not going to blow things up and you may get your money back quicker. But again, check with your tax preparer.
So before we go on, I want to remind viewers that we're definitely taking questions and love to hear what's on your mind as far as taxes. So please feel free to submit your questions. Scott, to a totally different, but related topic. Mm-hmm. Last week, the IRS obtained a court summons to potentially gain more information on certain cryptocurrency investors using one exchange. At a time when the value of Bitcoin and Ether seemed to have no direction but up, remind us, what is the taxpayer's tax obligations on their cryptocurrency holdings?
Well, the first thing I always like to say is it's going back to the old thing. Remember, it was an IRS agent or Department of Revenue agent that put Al Capone in Alcatraz. It was not beating people over the head with a baseball bat. So failure to disclose income is tax evasion. It's criminal. The IRS is specifically asking you on your tax filing, do you have any holdings in cryptocurrency? There may be people that says, how are they going to find out? So the first thing is, do not fail to disclose that. That could be deemed to be tax evasion and misfiling a tax return. And it could be deemed a material misstatement. So I'd be worried about that. But also don't forget, there have been many, many times in history where people thought they can get away with stuff. You may remember the Panama Papers where people having offshore accounts were leaked. And even back in 2009, UBS had a lot of clients with Swiss bank accounts. And the federal government went after them saying, we want to find some of this money that's avoiding paying U.S. taxes. And UBS said no. And the federal government said, well, UBS then, if that's the case, you can't do business in the United States. And then lo and behold, they gave the list of people to the federal government, to the IRS to do collections. The IRS did give some ability for a period of time for people to come clean. But anything you have in cryptocurrency, just buying cryptocurrency is not a taxable event. But anytime you use it or sell it, it's either long-term gains or short-term gains, and it has to be reported on your tax return. You know, I happen to have a crypto account. I've never done any sales, so I don't know what type of tax information you're going to get from the crypto account. But whether they do or they do not send you tax information, just because you don't get something or it's not reported to the federal government, anything of taxable income is required by the taxpayer to disclose that on your tax return. Again, crypto is not cash. It has the name cryptocurrency. Buying something US dollars, whether the dollar has inflated or deflated in value, is not a capital transaction. Doing a transaction in gold, barter, or cryptocurrency is deemed to be a capital gains transaction. If it's held over 12 months, it would be a long-term capital gain. If it's short-term capital gains, it'll be ordinary income tax rate. One thing I tell people is possibly it could be something if you have significant crypto gains. If you're one of these crypto millionaires and you are charitably inclined, it may be a very good thing to give to charity. To be, instead of giving cash, maybe giving some of your crypto gains, especially if they're long-term, to charity. But again, crypto transactions, whether it's used to purchase something or sold to redeem for cash or another cryptocurrency, is a capital transaction subject to taxation.
So to change gears again, May 17th, that marks, you know, the end of the filing season, of course, unless you get an extension, but there's more action to come from the IRS this summer. So talk to us a little bit about what's around the bend on the expanded child tax credit.
Well, the child tax credit is something that's very good, and they've actually made it a little bit easier to get. So one of the things that's going to be very nice to know that I always like to say first is a tax credit is better than a deduction. A tax credit is a dollar for dollar reduction in income taxes owed. A deduction versus a credit is a reduction in income subject to tax. So, and these are also refundable tax credits. So even if you owe no income tax, you might be able to get the reduction. One of the things they've done is it goes all the way through the age of 17. So as long as you're, by the end of the year, this year, not older than 17, your children are, you will get a $3,000 tax credit per child. If that child is younger than age 6 at the end of the year, that'll actually be a $3,600 tax credit. And that's a very good thing to do. But you also have to understand your income levels. If you're single, there's a $200,000 income limit before it starts phasing out for those credits. And if you file a joint tax return, it's $400,000. So going back to what we talked about before, if you're getting close to those phase out thresholds, it may be a great time to look at putting money into retirement accounts, the 401k, solo 401k. So if you're getting close, as an example, to an individual earning $200,000 and you haven't put money into your company's 401k, it may be a great time to defer your income into there to keep you below that threshold. I think that's a really good thing to do. And also the good news is there should not be any clawbacks in that, depending on your filing, for any of the other payments. But again, I think the most important thing that you have in there is you want to see what your income is going to be, because those can be very significant payments, especially if you have multiple children or multiple young children. But you need to be doing some tax preparation, meeting with your CPA, meeting with your tax team, to try to keep your income below those phase out thresholds.
And also for the summer, with this child tax credit, at least part of it is going to be advanceable, meaning people are going to start getting some part of the expanded credit starting this summer, right?
That's correct. And that's going to be based on the most recent tax filing. And everything I've read said there's no clawbacks. So if you have a 2019 return that has you below the thresholds, hold off on filing your 2020 return. If your 2019 doesn't qualify, then maybe now is a great time to file your 2020. If for whatever reason your income was lower in 2020, possibly because of job elimination or other things with the coronavirus, get that 2020 return filed as soon as possible.
So before we start going to listener questions, two more things looking ahead. We have the Biden administration infrastructure proposal and the corporate tax increases that go with it. And there's also even farther down the line, the possibility of higher personal income taxes at the top end of the income spectrum. So answer this, kind of wear two hats here, one in your tax professional hat and one in your, financial advisor hat. If I'm an investor, how might I play this, this potential infrastructure investment? And if I'm a high earning individual, how might I want to brace for the potential of more tax increases?
Well, one of the things that we're hearing on the income tax side, which you're kind of hitting on right now, is that most people believe that the income tax changes will have to be done through reconciliation probably later this year, and that it would not be effective for the tax year 2021. No one knows for sure. So you're gambling one way or the other. most people believe that income taxes will go up. They said it could go up in the personal income tax side as high as 39.6% for your income, and possibly still the 3.8% net investment income tax, or the Obamacare tax on passive investment income. So your income tax could be well above 40% plus your state income tax, where it goes up to. Depending on where you are this year or next year, it's an important time to sit down to see, number one, are you going to be hit by any of the thresholds that we're dealing with, where you might lose some stuff by having some gains this year? If you're already past those thresholds, it may make sense to take some of those gains this year that may be at a lower tax bracket. There's also some things you may lose. Also, if some of these transactions are in things like in real estate, they've been talking about taking away the ability for the 1031 tax-free exchange of real estate. If you're looking to do a real estate transaction and want to defer taxes, you may want to consider doing that sooner versus later. If you're looking at things to defer capital gains or even eliminate some of the capital gains using things like qualified opportunity zones, they may be limiting your ability to do that. So there's different types of things that may happen. Also, next year, we may see the Social Security tax, the amount you pay on payroll tax, become uncapped. So we're going to be talking later this year with a lot of our clients and a lot of people. Do we want to accelerate income to this year versus next year to avoid some of that additional payroll tax? The timing on this is going to be big. It could even be things like maybe doing additional Roth conversions this year to have the income tax hit this year. But you always have to worry about stealth taxes, taxes you didn't consider, because what if you would have gotten some of those child tax credits or some of the other payments if you would have had lower income taxes? So it's very much a balance of tax rates versus phase outs. And those are things that are very important. Even some of the things like, do I pay my property taxes this year versus next year? They're talking in some of the Democratic circles about maybe giving us the SALT limitations back, the state and local tax, being able to deduct more than the $10,000 cap in state and local tax. Will that be effective this year or next year? I don't know. But it'll be very important come the end of the year when you get your property tax bills to try to determine, is it better to pay it this year or pay it next year? But on top of that, they're even talking about reducing the ability for higher income earners to have some of the itemized deductions. Several years ago, before the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, the Trump tax cuts, you actually had some limitations on if you made income at a certain level, it started reducing the amount of itemized deductions. So it could be that they give you more deductions, but then reduce the amount that you could take against ordinary income. So there's a lot of changes, but all these are things that every taxpayer needs to take into account in terms of what they want to take in terms of taxable income this year versus next year, or even transactions that may make sense this year for next year. I have several clients that are baby boomer business owners that are looking to possibly sell their business this year to have the lower capital gains rates. And those are substantive transactions. And people are letting, in those cases, tax policy dictate some of the timing of these transactions.
So let's turn to some questions here. And we have a couple here that have to do with IRAs. All right. Neil wants to know, can I still make an after-tax IRA contribution for a backdoor IRA?
So what you have is you have the ability through May 17th for people outside of Texas, Louisiana, Oklahoma, or through June 15th to make an IRA contribution for 2020. So you could do that, whether it's deductible or not, or whether you want to put into a Roth directly. If your income is below those thresholds, you can. For the backdoor Roth contribution, what happens is people above certain income levels cannot put money directly into an IRA. Back with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, the IRS said it was okay to do a backdoor Roth IRA. Many people don't do it. I've been doing it for my wife since 2012, which means if you don't have any other IRAs and you put, say, $5,000 into an IRA, you can immediately convert it into a backdoor. You can immediately convert it to a Roth IRA, which is considered a backdoor Roth contribution. The benefit you have with this extension is you have, say, another month or so to be able to make the 2020 contribution to your IRA that you can convert. I always tell people with backdoor Roth contributions, though, is they look at your entire universe of IRAs, not employer plans, but IRAs. So if you have other IRAs, it may not be fully tax-free when you convert the IRA to a Roth IRA. Remember, in the backdoor, you're not taking the deduction, so the conversion is non-taxable. But there is a little bit of a landmine if you have other IRAs, so be careful.
So another question. Let's get to something on crypto, actually. Okay. Jerry wants to know, does your 2020 tax return require you to list holdings in cryptocurrency even if you had no sales in 2020 or you didn't use any crypto in any transactions?
Well, check with your CPA and the tax prep software, but I'm almost positive that they only require you to make a declaration, not all the holdings. I could be wrong on that one, but they aren't looking to do that. But once you do that, and if you did have transactions and you don't disclose it, then you're going back to the tax evasions. You're evading reporting income to the IRS, and that's a big deal. So be careful. If you did have transactions, that is a taxable event. So you really need to report that on your tax return.
So now here's a question on capital gains. Robert wants to know, if long-term capital gains increase, will it be retroactive to the first of the year, or would it start in the next year, 2020?
There's been very rare times where tax increases have been retroactive to earlier this year. So the first question is anything they pass in terms of tax rates going to be in 2020 or 2021? Most of the people I talk to that follow this very closely, CPAs and tax attorneys, believe any tax increases won't be effective till 2021, but no one knows for sure. But 99.9% of the people believe that if we have a capital gain now, like the people selling the business this year, that it will not be retroactive, and that at a minimum, it would only be prospectively, let's say they passed it on October 15th, it would only be for capital gains transactions between the effective date of that law, or sometimes when it's put into the Federal Register to the end of the year. But most people are believing that those types of transactions will not have the increased tax until next year. But again, until they write the legislation, we won't know for sure.
And, you know, retroactive, let's talk about a state law for a second. I mean, what's possible there? And I've heard that there is the possibility of sometimes a state law can be retroactive or that's very rare too, or what's going on with the state tax law?
Well, right now, every single person has the ability to exempt from estate taxes, and it's called the unified credit right now. So it's a unified tax for a lifetime gifts, for living gifts, for estate taxes, or even generation skipping taxes if you give it to more than one generation below where you are. It's $11.7 million per person. Most of the people are talking about reducing that to $3.5 million per person. That's a huge decrease. Some people even saying down to $1 million. Almost everybody I'm talking to, and this also includes IRS pronouncements a couple of years ago, I think it was, either last year or the year before, it's saying there's not going to be any clawback of any gifts made above a reduction to, say, a $3.5 million level. So I think it's very, very important for people to talk with their CPAs, their financial team, their tax attorneys, to see if it makes sense for them to make any gifts now and actually get the gifts completed to be able to make those types of things happen. There's also, I don't know if you've heard about it, Andrew, is that Bernie Sanders is talking about the 99.5% Act, which is basically saying to give more money to the 99.5% that don't have taxable estates. But they're talking about reducing the lifetime gift exemption to $1 million. They're talking about increasing the federal estate tax brackets, which are currently 40% on what you leave to heirs above those limits, to maybe 45 or even up to 65% for people at very high estate tax brackets. They're also looking at possibly doing away, maybe after $1 million, of what they call stepped up basis. Because right now, if you had a bunch of cryptocurrency that you bought a crypto for a dollar, had no basis on, and you died today and it was worth $5 million, there would be a stepped up basis. And if your spouse or another person inherited that money, that would be marked to market at your death, a stepped up basis. You would not pay capital gain, or the heirs would not pay a capital gains tax. They're looking at reducing or eliminating that step up in basis. So there's a lot of, also there's talking about other techniques that we use significantly with estate planning, things like family partnerships or family LLCs, where we make gifts and use discounting techniques. They're talking about taking away some of the benefits possibly of grantor retained annuity trusts, different types of charitable trusts, making defective trusts, different types of things we do to help people mitigate some of these estate taxes and death taxes. But they're trying to take away a lot of these strategies. one thing that I've read in the act is they're talking about making the tax rate changes effective next year, but the elimination of some of these estate planning techniques eliminated upon passage of these bills. So if Bernie Sanders, who's, I think he's on the Senate Budget Committee now, if he actually got that either passed as a standalone bill or put on one of these other bills, it could mean that if you're talking with an estate planning team about using some of these estate planning techniques, getting it done sooner versus later may make sense, because even if they aren't changing the tax rates till next year, if they pass these this law before you actually affect and get this transaction done, you may lose some of the benefits of these transactions. So some of the people that are putting these transactions in place are putting some safety valves in to be able to protect against that, because if you make a gift above your exemption, it doesn't work. It could actually cause gift taxation immediately, which could be the person making the gift could owe maybe a 45% gift tax upon making that gift. So knowing what these rules are going to be are very, very important. And we're keeping our ear to the ground here at Davidian Wealth to make sure we know what these things are, because these things are going to be very, very important to Americans, especially the higher net worth Americans, both on the income tax and estate tax side.
I guess, yeah, there's just so much to, so many open stories and plot lines, and we'll all be keeping our ears open. But that's all the time we have for today. Thank you, Scott, for joining us. And we hope you listen to our next episode tomorrow about SPACs. Barron's Senior Managing Editor Lauren L. Rublin, reporter Nicholas Jasinski, and Julian Klimochko, CEO and Chief Investment Officer of Accelerate Financial Technologies, will be discussing the outlook for SPACs and understanding the risks and rewards. Thank you for listening, and be well and be safe.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.